My name's Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, the program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I am so grateful that Lee invited me here, and I am even more grateful that I have Janet and Rena. I met these ladies in Columbus, Ohio. Bob and I were doing a book study, and, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just like, you know, you meet these people and then just something goes into the heart, and it's just, they've touched my life so much. And if you come up today and you hug me and you get a whiff of me, it's because these ladies gave me some beautiful perfume for my 35th anniversary, and I'm just so blessed. And I was so rude last night, Bill, I'm so sorry, but I was more interested in my present, and I had to open it before you started. So, but, you know, I'm always telling Rena, her and I, now Janet, she's younger, still, you know, got some time to go, for she's as old as Rena and I, but I look at Rena and I tell her, I say, baby, I want to be like you when I grow up. I mean, it's just, these women are just fabulous. And as in the words of Don Pritt, the really serious people are here this morning. At 9 o'clock in the morning. That's what he used to say. If you show up at 9 o'clock in the morning, that's a serious people. And I have some friends that got on a motorcycle this morning and drove from Jacksonville. So that is like, wow. So that's what people do. And this is what step three is all about, is being willing to go to any lengths. And I brought my big book, but Rena, thank you that you read that already. I want to comment on Bill and Sandy. And I'm one of the lucky ones that come from Southern California. So I know Bill when it's not just speaking and watching him do stuff in Hermosa Beach and around Southern California. And for those of you who don't know, Bill looks very different. He came to Mount Baker to speak. And I looked at him and I said, where did you go? Because he's so trim and slim and gorgeous. But I tell you something, sweetheart, when you stood up last night, I was wondering if you were going through the ceiling. It was just about not tall enough for you. Anyway, I'm delighted to be here. And I listened to Sandy last night, and Sandy has the ability to speak and not have to speak for a really long time. He can just say it, and he so succinctly says it, and it's all said. And it's just, and he gets the point across. I read a non-AA approved book in the morning. And it's called God Calling. And I don't know if anybody reads God Calling. But day before yesterday in God Calling, there was the reading, and it says, kill self. Kill self. Because that's the enemy, is self. Kill self. Self is the enemy. And Ralph says, you know, get rid of ego, grow God. Just, it's all about growing God. Now, how you can do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous without God, I have no idea. I have no idea. The only thing I know, judgment, here comes judgment. This is not in the big book. But what happens with me is I see people who fight God, and they may be sober, but they seem so angry to me. That's what happens. I feel, and I don't know about you, but I'm one of these people that's pretty sensitive. And when I bump up against anger, I can feel it. And it's just a energy that just goes out and just, but what happens is when we bring God into our lives, we begin to get that peace and that calmness. And I don't know what kind of an alcoholic you are, but I am an alcoholic who is in perpetual motion. Now, I've got it channeled a little more positively today, but it used to not be channeled that way. It used to just be, I was just one of those people that was just so uptight. I mean, it was just, I love to, you know, listen to Clancy talks, because he talks about that spring that just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And that's the kind of person I was. And all I wanted to do was take alcohol and drugs and not have that. Just, I mean, Dave is a guy who took speed so he could drink more. I don't want any speed. I've got all I need. I don't want any of that. What I want to do is I just want to calm down. I just feel like I can't get it down. And I'm grateful today because Sandy talks also about staying on the beam. He was a pilot. And he talks about staying on the beam. Bob talks about the crosshairs. And this is what I'm trying to do today. And what happens is we kind of have to adjust from time to time in order to stay in the beam or to stay in the crosshairs. And I think that's what our program is about. And I'm glad that people come up to me, Bill, and they tell me the truth, whether I want to hear it or not, because I think that that's the love. And if it had, my husband has said to me many times, because I am a person who is depressed by nature. I'm a Bill Wilson. I'm one of these people that has, I mean, I have to do things to not be depressed. Now, I don't know if any of you have depression, but I do. And what I have found an antidote for depression, and that is working with another alcoholic. Because if I can stay out of me, I can stay out of depression. So all of this tied in together is what we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about on step three and my experience with step three. And I think that's what's so beautiful about these Woodstocks that we've started. And Bob sort of gave us all the idea and started one down at State Line. And that is that get people in and they talk about their experience with the steps. And that's all I have. You know, that's all I have is my experience, strength, and hope. I can stand up here and I can preach to you and I can read the book and I can tell you, because I brought my book. I'm always safer with the book. But Rena read what I was going to read anyway. So that was perfect. I didn't have to read the book. But it's my experience. And my experience with step three, I think, is like with a lot of people, and especially, I believe, with people in the South. And I was born and raised in Texas, and I was raised Southern Baptist, and I was raised right where they took the Bible Belt and gave it an extra pull. And I can assure you, to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care, and that's the word to me, is the care, that God's going to care for me, to the care of God as I understand Him. But what happened is the God that I understood when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is not the God that I understand today. And I'm not sure what's worse with the women that I sponsor. I'm not sure if it's worse that the women that come to me and say, well, I don't believe in God. If there was a God, none of this stuff would happen. Look at the wars. Look at women being molested. Look at men being molested. Look at what's happening. How could God allow all that to happen? And I have those women. And I'm not sure what's worse than to have somebody who was raised in a very fundamental Christian home and have to unlearn that. Because what happened was, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, And I was raised in these churches that these preachers were standing at the podium and they were screaming things. And I mean, they looked to me like they were so mad. Their faces were red and veins were sticking out and they were screaming, "You're born a sinner! You're going to burn in hell!" And I just came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous hopeless, absolutely hopeless. And then you tell me the solution is God. But you don't understand. You don't understand about me. And you see, I came in, I think, like so many alcoholics. And I just did a fifth step with a woman I sponsor. And she's 28 years sober. And I just did this past Tuesday. And her whole inventory was, "I hate me. I hate me." And she just, you know, finally just said, "I got to do this. I keep thinking it, I keep feeling it, and I got to do it." That's how I came here. I hate me. I hate me. I was a person who absolutely loved the two children that I had. I had two of the most precious little boys. But what happened was, is that I, because of a disease called alcoholism, abused those children severely. I abused them physically. I hit them, especially my little curly-headed youngest son. I'd grab a hold of his hair and just shake his curly head because I'd just be so angry at him. Today he says he's bald because I pulled all his hair out. But this is what I did. And I'd have these little faces. And I had an athlete and a musician. That's what my two sons were. And I'd promise them, "I'll be at your concert. I'll be at your game." And of course, what would happen for me, because I'm an alcoholic, is I would take a drink of alcohol. And then I couldn't make it. I would pass out on the sofa. And here would come these little kids home. And they would look at me with that little face and say, You promised me that you'd be there. And then the meanness that you just read about, the meanness would say, "Can't you see that I'm sick? Don't you understand I couldn't make it?" And make it all about me. And make it their fault that they don't understand what's wrong with me. And so I knew about that woman. I knew about the little girl who had these really sweet parents. And they weren't well. My parents were two abused children and they found each other. And my mother and dad had an opposite reaction to that. And the thing about it was, is my father was really, really angry and my mother was just all into herself. And what I kind of came out was just kind of the worst of both of them, you know, like an angry wimp. And but I was the person. And Albert Myers used to say, "I'm addicted to approval." And I understand that. I am addicted to approval. And what would happen is when I was around you, I was just so nice. But when I was around my little boys and my husband was in the Air Force and he was in the Strategic Air Command and he was gone all the time. So we can hardly even put him in the picture because he entrusted me with our two children while he left. He made three tours in Vietnam. So, you know, these are the kind of things that were going on in my life. And I could not be any better than I was because of a disease called alcoholism. Now, if you yell and scream at your parents, and that's what I did, because you see, my parents loved me so much, they didn't want to discipline me because of the horrible stuff that had happened to them. They didn't want to discipline me. So here I was, an out-of-control, spoiled little brat that was screaming and yelling at her parents, who were, my dad had a ninth grade education, and my mother was a nurse, who they had no money, but they sacrificed so that I had gymnastic lessons, dance lessons, sent me to New York to study dancing, all of this stuff that they did to sacrifice. My mother sitting up all night making dance costumes and then get up and go to work the next morning. Those are the things. That's the kind of love I come from. That's the kind of love I come from. But what I'm so grateful for, and I have some people in this room who love Marcy White. And Marcy White used to talk about the blessing and that some of us got the blessing as children. And some of us didn't get the blessing till we came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, I had the blessing as a child. And the blessing is that I was loved. I was so loved. And I did not even know that till I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was so sick and in such a spiritual malady that I didn't even know that I was being loved. And that's what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about, that if we are suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You can't love me enough, you can't give me enough, you can't do enough. Because there simply is not enough to satisfy the selfish, self-centered person that I am. And I did not even know that till I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was blessed. I love to always talk with Bob because he's been to more treatment centers than I have. But I've been to a lot of them. I've been to three, and that's I've been to three treatment centers. I often love to hear people talk that have our amount of sobriety and say there was no treatment centers. Boy, we found them. I had plenty of treatment centers. And at any rate, I've been to treatment three times. And the first two times, when they'd sober me up, I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't face who and what I was. I couldn't face the mother I had become. I couldn't face the wife I had become, the daughter, the friend, anything. I just couldn't stand me. And on my second treatment, I just knew that I couldn't live inside my own skin sober. And I love to hear Clancy talk, and he hits a person like me. Because, you know, my problem didn't seem to be the alcohol. My problem seemed to be the sobriety. That when I'm sober, I can't deal with it. I can't live life. I can't do life. And it's why I like stuff like, I like all kinds of downers. I'm not wanting to get up and have a good time. That's what I've done since I've been sober. People tell me today that I go to AA like most people go to cocktail parties. I work the room. I love it. Linda says, it took you forever to get down here last night. I love it. I love people. But there was a time when I didn't want to do that. All I wanted to do was just be out because I couldn't suit up and show up and do life. Life was too hard for me. I just couldn't do life. And so what happens is when I sober up is when the problems are there, because I can't stand me. I can't deal with me. And all I have to do is do something else to get out. And on the last time I sobered up, I had been brought back into that treatment center, and I had been beaten up, and I had been assaulted, and I was brought back into that treatment center by the man who would become my first sponsor. And he 12-stepped me out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and brought me back into that treatment center. And I have a sponsee named Donna, and Donna says, you know, that sometimes you have to just learn to do time, you know, just hang in there and just do time. Well, I didn't know I was learning to do that. But my first treatment center, that's what I did. I knew that this was a 7-day detox, which is why I love detox too, Bob. I love, Dave and I are always going to detox centers because I was in two detox centers. And I guarantee you, those are not fancy jitter joints. Those are, you know, really county detox are not fancy jitter joints. And I ended up in a fancy jitter joint, but I was in two detoxes. And I was in this detox, and I knew the drill because I'd been in there before. And the first time I had fallen in love, you know how we fall in love in treatment, you know, sick falls in love and sick and we walk off into happy destinies. Of course, it had not, you know, there was no problem that I was married and had two kids at home. You know, we just fall in love and away we go. And that's what I did. And I was brought back into this treatment center. And I couldn't deal with me. I couldn't deal with what had happened in that motel. I couldn't deal with anything about me. But I was going to do time. So I stuck out that 7 days. And when I left that treatment center, I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. And God has so been working in my life, all of my life. I just am so grateful today that I can pause and see. And see God's hand working in my life. And I'm here to tell you, in the past few months, I've had so much love come my way and so many good things. Sometimes I can't even stand it. It's so good. And it's just been wonderful. And what I'm grateful for is that today I can see it. Now, I'm not that spiritual, so I miss half of it, I'm sure. But I see some of it. I see some of the gifts that God is constantly giving me. And what happened was, this woman said to me, she went looking for me and she just went looking for me and she found my car parked outside of this motel. And I know today that what happened was, is that that was God working in my life through her, because she said something came over her and she had to find me. And I know that that's the hand of God. And I know that all of us can tell those same stories. The hand of God that touches somebody else's life or touches our life and works through us. But that's what happened for me. And what happened was, she called 911 and an ambulance came and I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. And that was on April the 8th of 1977. This is such a miraculous program and there is so much divine intervention. And I know that so many of us, I mean, you talk about a cat with 9 lives. My God, who knows how many lives we've had. But what happened for me is I just had divine intervention. I ended up being court committed to a treatment center in Dallas, Texas. I was taken to this treatment center. What would happen is that I would begin to be given. I had been introduced to AA and the detox center, and I loved AA. I mean, when you're in a detox center, they send you to meetings all day long. And a little bit of group, but it's mostly AA meetings and people coming in to visit you and stuff like that. And I got court committed to this treatment center. Now it's a little bit different, this treatment center, because now we're going to do groups. And I don't think it's a bit different now today than it was then. You know, everybody sits in group and you talk a lot about your feelings. I'm not real impressed with feelings today, but we talked a lot about our feelings. And what happened was, is I'd listened to these tragic stories about all these things that had happened to these little boys and girls, and none of those things had happened to me. And I could look at you and I'd say, well, I understand why you're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? None of those things have happened to me. And because all I got was love. And I'm so grateful today that I know that the disease of alcoholism is equal opportunity. And what happens is it can get a Polly or it can hit a president's wife. It doesn't matter. It's equal opportunity. And I today know that if I had had any of the tragic things that have happened to a lot of little boys and girls, I would be able to blame that on someone. Because I don't know how many times throughout our marriage, Dave has had to say to me, Polly, when you're like this, I don't know what to do with your victim. And if I had had anything to blame it on, I would have blamed it on something and not wanted to take responsibility for my illness. What happens is I think God has a great sense of humor about how he does things. Because my first AA sponsor had been an only child, a captain in the Navy, a Monsignor priest. Now, I don't know if you guys know the prejudices, but if you're Southern Baptist, the worst people are the Catholics. That's it. I can remember being 18 years old when I first got to vote. I got to vote for John Kennedy. Anybody remember it? Some of you guys are much too young for that. But I got to vote for John Kennedy. And that was the first president I got to vote for, and I voted for him. And what happened was our preacher was standing up there telling us, don't vote for John Kennedy. He's a Catholic. And the Pope will rule the United States. And that's what I was brought up with. That's what I knew before God was so gracious to plant me in the United States Air Force, where we were everybody. It was just like AA. Sometimes I'm one of these women that came to AA that did not dislike women. I'm always getting women that I sponsor, and they don't like other women. And I'm like here to say, I didn't get that when I came to AA, that women didn't like women. If you are an Air Force officer's wife, or an Air Force wife, period, or a military wife, period, you better learn to love women or you're going to be a lonely chick. That's all there is to it. Because the guys are gone. And women help women. That's what happened with me. That's where I learned. Women take care of women. And I knew that long before I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the women take care of women. And I'm grateful for that, because I'm somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous who absolutely loves women. And I say this all the time. I am not a lesbian, but I love women. I love the energy of women. I like to hang out with women. And my husband says, so does he. So... So we like women. We love women. And so that's, you know, and I'm grateful for that. But here was Frank. He was a captain in the Navy. He was an only child, and he was a Monsignor priest in the Navy. And Frank had ended up, after his mother died, but he had already been sober, he left the priesthood to marry an Asian woman that he had known most of his life, and he would not marry her because he had been a priest for his mother. So it was, here was this man that was dropped in my life, and he would become my first sponsor. And he was the man who 12-stepped me out of that treatment center, out of that motel, and brought me into that treatment center in Euless, Texas. Now, this is how God works. How do you orchestrate that? How do you orchestrate things that have happened in our life? Just look at the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. How do you orchestrate that? How do you put all of those little bricks into place that make life happen the way it happens? There's no way we can make that happen. And I didn't see this for years, okay? This wasn't something that I got grasp of after going through treatment. And what happened is I got court committed to this treatment center in Dallas, Texas. And then I'm going to leave this treatment center, and Frank is going to be my sponsor. And what happens is I began to have experiences with Frank. First of all, he gets to share his experience, strength, and hope with me and tells me, Polly, I am a priest. I should know all about God. This is what I teach, is I teach God. But let me tell you what kind of priest I am. I have the disease of alcoholism, and as a priest, I was selfish and self-centered, and I was God. So what happens is, as I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talk about God, and it is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was able to turn my life over to the care of this God. The God I had was going to put me in purgatory and hell and all the things that that mean, punishing God was going to do. And I could scare people with that God. Well, he might have been Catholic and I might have been Baptist, but I understood the fear of God. My mother used to say, we live in a God-fearing home. Today, Dave and I live in a God-loving home. And Frank used to say, Polly, if you can't believe in this God that loves you so much, then just believe that I believe. And so what I began to do with my third step is a lot like what the book talks about, is that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a power greater than myself. In fact, Bill talks about a lot of times, you know, a group of drunks. Alcoholics Anonymous, a sponsor. If I just sort of needed a God in the beginning with some skin on him. And what happened was, is Frank would tell me, just believe that I believe. And what would happen little by little, and I do this with my sponsees because it's what Frank would do with me, I constantly point out to them how God's working in their life. Look at what happened. Look at this miracle. Look how this happened. Look how fast. And, I mean, we've been just, Bobby and Cheryl, we've been just dying laughing at how fast God operated in their lives. It was so fast, they didn't even know what hit them. They didn't even have time to get afraid. They came to visit me in Jacksonville, liked Jacksonville, decided they wanted to move here, went home, sold their house, bought another house, all in about 6 weeks' time. They were spinning. God was working so fast. You don't sell a house in this time. That doesn't happen. They did. This is God works. Point it out. Look at it. And we get to see how God works. And that's what began to happen for me, is he would point out all the things that God was doing. He would point out, Polly, God is the principal. We are his agents. That's what it says in the third step. I'm his agent. I work for God. I have the most beautiful AA sponsor today. And anybody who knows Dottie knows how beautiful she is. And Dottie is one of these people that always says, pray for a servant's heart. Pray for a servant's heart. Because the more you serve, the more we're blessed. Doesn't seem like it ought to be like that. Seems like the more we get, the more we are blessed. But it's the more we serve, the more we're blessed. And I began to see how God was caring for me. That he is in my, I am in his care. And be willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. The God as I understand today didn't happen. It was a long process. And it's still evolving, the God of my understanding today. The more I stay in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more my relationship with God unfolds. And what I want to do is be rid of self. Less self, more God. Because the less self I have, the happier I am. Because without the self, I don't want for things that I don't have. I don't want to be something I'm not. All of the things that I always wanted. And I don't know if any of you who are my age, or maybe you don't have to be my age, but have you ever gone back and looked at a picture of yourself? And I hated her. I used to think, you know, she's this, she's that, and I'll go back and I'll look and I'll say, oh my God, she was so pretty, and I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that. I missed it. I didn't even know what God had done. But I get to see that today. I get to open my heart. I have a sponsee. A lot of you might know Donna. And Donna has had a lot of tragedy in her life. She has lost 2 children in sobriety. And she uses a term I love. And she says, God breaks our heart enough times so it stays open. And I think that's what happens to alcoholics, that we bring so much pain upon ourselves that we get our hearts broken so many times that it just stays open. God works in mysterious ways, His miracles to perform. And I'm just going to kind of end with something about my sons. I'm an Al-Anon member. I am one of those people, Bill. And my Al-Anon sponsor doesn't talk about me taking care of me. I don't know about you, but mine doesn't talk about that. Mine talks about me stopping trying to run everybody else's life because I seem to think that's my job. And when I got sober, my oldest son was trying to kill himself every time Russ has a lot of problems. And he has some grave emotional and mental disorders. And my youngest son was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And when I got sober, I thought that I was going to die because my oldest son was trying to kill himself and my youngest son was running the streets of Venice, California, an alcoholic and a drug addict. And today I said, well, what did you do there? And he says, Mom, you don't want to know. You don't need to know any of that stuff. That's just not. And I was sober. And at 5 years of sobriety, my daughter-in-law calls me about my oldest son and tells me that my oldest son has put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I think, I'm going to die sober. I am going to die sober. I can't stand the pain. I'm going to have to do something. I am in too much pain. And I went to an AA meeting, and I believe in taking the solution to the meeting and the mess to your sponsor. But that day I took the mess to the meeting because I had got the call on the way to the meeting. And what happened was that I got up and I was screaming about this, and some old guy in the back told me, you just need to turn those boys over. And I jumped up out of my seat and I said, do you want to tell me how to do that? Promise you people, that is not the way you go to AA. That is not what you do. Unless you're crazy. And I was crazy. And so what happened was what we're talking about and what Chuck Chamberlain used to say all the time, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And this lady walked up to me who was sitting in that meeting, who was a double winner. And she says, Polly, I need to take you to an Al-Anon meeting. And what happened is I went to an Al-Anon meeting and those women surrounded me and they said, of course you feel like you feel. But what we're going to show you how to do is to love your children without it killing you. And I am so grateful that I've been given that gift. God works in mysterious ways. My oldest son got sober 2.5 years ago. So don't, know that it can always happen. My youngest son got sober when I was 6.5 years sober. God worked pretty fast there because that was 5 years when I went to Al-Anon. So God worked pretty fast in James's life. But let me tell you what James has said. And he gets to talk. He talks as well. And I've heard him share from a podium. I knew AA worked because I saw the transformation in my mother. I am not the person who came here 35 years ago. That person abuses children, hurts people, and is mean. That's who came here 35 years ago. And because of this program, and because of a God of my understanding, I am not that person today. And the big book talks about having a transformation and a psychic rearrangement. And I know that I can keep that if I follow the dictates of the big book. And the big book says that I get a daily reprieve. And I tell you, I got sober in Texas, and there's a lot of rednecks in Texas. And I'm telling you, you know, they were going to, you know, if somebody walked into a meeting and they were whining and crying and all this stuff, some old guy in the back would say, well, you had five ways to grow and you blew them all. But, you know, it's like a daily reprieve, and it's contingent. It says I get a daily reprieve, but it's more to it than that. It's contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. So that tells me I've got to do something every single day. My youngest son got sober at 21. And he said he came to AA because he saw the transformation in his mother. Because I made a decision way back there when I got sober. And Frank said, make a decision, just like going to college. Make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. And your understanding right now might be really poor. But like college, we're going to spend the rest of the steps like you spend the next 4 years. But you got to make the decision. You've got to have the key of willingness, the key of willingness to do it. Today, my sons, more miracles. Don't look like it ought to be a miracle. More miracles. My oldest son has been divorced over 2 years. My youngest son is in the process of getting a divorce. It's not nice. It's not nice a lot. And especially where the children are concerned. It's not nice. And what happened was, is my two sons were at each other all the time. And mostly my oldest son. Because James is just like one of these people that just kind of has the Midas touch. You know, it just, not a lot of what he does, but just everything he sort of touches turns to gold. And you wouldn't know it. I mean, he doesn't dress that way, doesn't drive a big car or anything like that. But that's just who he is. And his brother knows this and has always been so jealous of James. And Russ has always said, the only problems in life is you just don't have enough money. That's what's wrong. If you had enough, you know, if I had enough money, everything would be okay. And the transformation has happened that when Russ saw what was happening to James, he said, I thought that the worst thing in life was not having enough money until I saw what was happening to my brother. And my sons today have come together, and what looked like the worst thing, I mean, that's, you know, how God works. So whatever is going on in our lives, it's absolutely perfect. And what's happening is that God's in charge. God is in charge of our lives. And what happens is if we'll look for the God, if we'll look to see where the things that seem the worst, needing a liver. You can't live without a liver, Bill. Yeah. Can't live without a liver. But God's using you more now than I've ever seen Him use you. And I've known you a lot of years. You're the best you've been. This is how God works. This is how God works. So no matter what's going on, and my husband says, when you come to AA, God doesn't need much, just what you've got left. That's all he needs. Just what you've got left. And I'm really grateful that I have a God today of my understanding. And he loves me. And he treats me like I'm his only child. And I hated being an only child. I used to lie about having brothers and sisters. And now I have brothers and sisters, but he treats me like I'm his only child. He showers gifts on me from nowhere. He showers gifts. And he gives me love. And I tell you, sometimes I am so loved, I can't even take it all in. It's so much. This is AA. This is our God. Please, let's don't. We need him. We need whatever God is that you understand. We need God. It's what keeps the peace and the acceptance of what's going on today and takes everything that's going on and uses it. In 1993, my grandson was born, and he was born deaf. And I was so angry at God. How could you do this? There are people who have children and they don't even want them. And our little boy is born deaf. How could you do that? Look how much service we are. We were all in AA. But you know, the gift is James and Kelly were in AA. And because of that, they were relieved of the bondage of self. And it didn't cost too much and never took too much. They were there for that little boy. And I'd like for you to know that Ryan is finishing his first year at Rochester Institute of Technology. And he's handicapped in no way. I didn't get that. Because of Ryan, I got to learn to sign. And because of signing, I got to help some deaf women. Who would have thought? Who would have thought that God's going to use that? Just know that it is God's pleasure. It is his absolute pleasure. And just because, as Clancy says, we have a disease of perception and we can't see it, it is absolutely his pleasure to give us the keys to the kingdom. God bless you.